Hello, Internet. This is Ewan Spence and ESE Insight calling. It's all gone so very, very quiet. Coming up on the show, we're waiting to hear about Australia, we're waiting to hear about the whole city, we're waiting to hear anything, really. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, welcome to another edition of the ESE Insights Eurovision podcast, bringing you all the news from the last 7 days in the world of the Eurovision Song Contest. It's a bit tumbleweed. Yes, the summer usually goes quiet, there's usually a bit where it just goes incredibly quiet with not much going on, and it feels like we're in that window just now, but that's okay. There's still a little bit of stuff going on. We'll bring that up to you now because we're doing this weekly and we're going to stick to it this summer. There we go. Right, www.eseinsight.com is our website. You can support us at Patreon, eseinsight.com/Patreon. And what else do we have going on? Let's have a little look at what we know this week that's different about a hosting of the contest coming up in May. Yes, tumbleweed again. The entry list has not changed. We still have the country's broadcasters who have officially declared it's exactly the same. There may be more who have done it quietly to the EBU, but not publicly announced it, set up a press release or anything like that. So we are still left with our list of Albania, Australia, Bulgaria, Denmark, Estonia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Israel, Italy, Malta, Netherlands, Norway, Poland, Romania, San Marino, Serbia, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland and Ukraine. Feels like an episode of Record Breakers there. In terms of host city, there's nothing to report here either. Although, with no announcement and no white smoke from the EBU chimney in Geneva, there's no suspicious jump in hotel prices. There's just a lot of chatter about what could happen. A lot of the Italian press is sort of highlighting cities, local press is highlighting their city and why it's the best one there. Even the official website is getting in on the action, although its neutral stance means it's more of a historical look at previous host cities, you know, the differences, what makes some of them stand out, such as Mill Street in Ireland back in the 90s, or Edinburgh Castle when the UK hosted in the 70s. So that's a fun read, Eurovision.tv, while we're all waiting to find out who gets a shot for the 2022 contest. Depending on who you want to trust as a source, every city's in with a shot, but the cities that have more shots than others are Turin and Bologna, so we're down to potentially two. And AREA has previously said that there's an announcement expected before the end of August, so we've probably got another 2 weeks on that one as well. Oh, we got a little bit of news from Junior Eurovision as well. The entry list there remains the same. It's still our hosts France, Georgia, Germany, Ireland, Malta, Netherlands, North Macedonia, Poland, Portugal, Russia, Serbia, Spain and Ukraine. Australia has popped up to Junior Eurovision the last few years, but did not show up at the 2020 contest because of the pandemic, the lockdown. Every country has their own regulations, and Australia is pretty, pretty strict on that. Those restrictions meant the SBS were relying on a pre-recorded performance when they appeared at the Grown Ups Contest, Rotterdam 2021, a couple of months ago. But they didn't do that for Junior Eurovision last year. They withdrew the entry. This week saw what can be best described as a holding statement regarding Junior Eurovision. Replying to the team over at ESC Plus, the broadcaster said SBS is always exploring all possible ways to bring more Eurovision to the Australian public. At this moment, we cannot tell more. Realistically, this is me speaking now, the only options are a pre-recorded video entry. And even then, it's an awkward choice, but it's not impossible, as we saw at last year's Junior Eurovision, where broadcasters built replica stages to take part and fit in with the show. There is always a way, but I suspect Australia will skip Junior Eurovision 2021, just as it did for Junior Eurovision 2020. On the flip side, going a bit bigger for Junior Eurovision is Ukraine, as we have some news on their selection process from broadcaster UAPBC. This year's Junior Eurovision entrant for Ukraine will be selected through a televised national final. A tender has gone out to production companies looking to host the show, between 12 and 16 performers, with the show to take place on October the 23rd. No doubt we'll get more details once the tender has been awarded and the production company has laid out how they're going to do the show. We'll keep an eye on that. We'll let you know. Okay, what other news have we got for May next year? Okay, let's start with Israel, because we have dates for Israel's X Factor, which this year will be helped selecting the singer for the Israeli Eurovision entry. The first week of October, we'll see the pre-recorded and the edited audition rounds before the usual X Factor shenanigans to find a winner, probably going right through to December and January. The winner will be the Eurovision-bound performer, but the song will be decided at a later date, whether that's an internal selection, a big online vote, or a song for Italy-styled national final that's broadcast on television remains to be seen. But anyway, first week of October for that one. Fun one for the Netherlands over on Spotify. Arcade has passed 500 million streams on Spotify. Now, there is a little bit of a fun here, as it appears the stream count for the actual release of Duncan Lawrence's Arcade has had a little bit of a boost, because the version with Duncan duetting with US singer Fletcher has been added in. So they've combined the two versions of the song, but still, 500 million. Congratulations there, Duncan. Let's finish up with two from Sweden, and specifically the Eurovision Legends podcast, which is mentioned here before, has a two-parter interview with Christer Björkman, who's done Melody Festival and head delegation for Eurovision, creative consultant, busy off working on the American Song Contest at the moment. Do head over and listen to Emil and the full podcast there. But two points in those interviews have been picked up by the wider Eurovision community. The first is Björkman talking about his decision at Melody Festival in 2017 to pair up Lorraine against Anton Hagman in the Andra Chanson pairing. Winner qualifies to the final, loser was eliminated into the dual format in the second chance round. Björkman said that this was the worst decision of his career, to create that pairing. And for me, this is the perfect distillation of the entertainment versus contest balance that you find around the song contest in every area. Running Order is a very small, subtle example of this, but this is really highlighted it. Because from a competitive point of view, it doesn't matter the pairing. Hagman got more votes. Hagman goes to the Saturday night grand final. End of discussion. But in terms of storyline, in terms of the journey, in terms of being attracted to get viewers in to watch the show, Lorraine would have made for a better production of a grand final for Melody Festivalen. And there's no right answer here, but I do find it interesting that, you know, given the contest versus entertainment, Björkman feels that his worst decision was one that dampened the entertainment side of things. But, you know, there is no right answer there. The second point are his comments on the BBC's handling of the song contest. I'll quote him here. "I don't really know what is wrong with the BBC. It's remarkable how badly they handle this competition." Okay, hold up there, Christer, because a broadcaster does not work in isolation. No broadcaster does. Not the BBC, not SVT, not anybody. I wonder what would happen if the SVT staff were parachuted into the UK Eurovision environment with a disengaged media, a music industry that doesn't want their big names associated with the contest. How would they get on? Would they be any different to what the BBC are able to deliver? And on the flip side, what would happen if you took the BBC staff and parachuted them into Sweden and asked them to organise Melody Festivalen, where they have the support of the mainstream media, where they have the record labels pushing artists and songs toward them, and you have the support of every department inside SVT all pushing in the same direction? Would they be just as successful as Melody Festivalen's team? You know, after all, they do quite well in getting celebrities and musical acts into Strictly Come Dancing, something that the UK media supports, something that the UK record industry supports. Food for thought. Yeah. Right then, it's a quiet week for Eurovision News. It's a quiet week around the community as well. Obviously, we've got the weekly podcast going on. We're getting ready for Eurovision again with a special backstage podcast that'll be here next week, as will Eurovision again. In terms of what year it will be, well, that gets announced 15 minutes before the show. So it's next Saturday, 9:45 UK, 20:45 Central European. Fine time to find the year with the synchronized watch starting on YouTube at 8 p.m. UK, 9 p.m. Central Europe. We're on Patreon as well. We've got some stuff going on there over the rest of the month. We're going to look at the use of technology at the Eurovision Song Contest following that debut of the HD, not broadcast, but still recorded version of the 2006 contest at the start of the month. And we'll be having up the September the 1st date as well and how important it is. It's probably going to be the next week or two there as well. Patreon.com/ESC Insight. You can support us there for the price of a smart coffee per month. And we thank all of you who do. What else? Well, we've already highlighted Eurovision Legends. So don't forget Emil and the team in their interviews with Eurovision Legends. Nice, simple name. I like that one. But also, don't forget JP and his team over at Eurovision Radio International. 4 hours of Eurovision show every week with interviews, cover songs, artist spotlights, requests, birthday call-outs, and more. It's a good old-fashioned radio show. All the music with the chat in between. You can listen live and listen again at radiointernational.blogspot.com. And JP's also featured on a number of radio stations around the world. Full details and the archives, as I said, radiointernational.blogspot.com. Dates for the diary. Assuming you're listening to this as we put the podcast up, you've got like 2 days to hand in your submissions if you want to be a song for Norway next year. You've got before the end of the month for the Netherlands. Songs need to be submitted then by August the 31st. Finland opens on September the 1st but closes on September the 6th, so get your songs ready there. And Junior Eurovision, Serbia has a closing date if you want to submit any music, if you're a writer or such like, to September the 20th. We got three national finals next month for Junior Eurovision. Germany on the 10th, Netherlands on the 25th, Poland on the 26th. As we said earlier on the show, Ukraine, we now have a date there as well, October the 23rd for their Junior Eurovision national final. And Junior Eurovision itself, Sunday, 9th the 19th of December, Paris. I thought I'd get through the whole show. Nope, not quite. Hey, there we go. Right then, that's it. That's your podcast. It's been a quiet week in the world of the Eurovision Song Contest, but the music is out there. The artists are out there, the random Spotify playlists and all of that and more. www.escinsight.com to keep us up to date. You can find us in all the usual podcast places and you can leave your reviews for us there as well. Stay safe, be kind, keep washing your hands. Ta-ra for now. Cue the guitars. This week's ESC Insight News podcast was written and hosted by Ewan Spence and the ESC Insight team. www.escinsight.com.